Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Ayin Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's Shiur 7 lines from the top of Daf Ayin Dalid. The topic that we will be dealing with is featured under our Nosei heading in the margin, and we've indicated that this Nosei, this topic, lasts till Omid Beis. And in one word, it's Borer, the Melacha of separating that which is desired from that which is undesirable, as is the case in separating food from the shells or peels of whatever is whatever they contain. Let us now start the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, Hoyu Lefonov Mine Oichlin. Person had in front of him different foods. Borer V'ochel Borer Meniach. He chooses and puts aside. V'lo Yivror V'im Birer Chayav Chatas. Now this source is practically without any understanding. Take for example the end of the source. It says Lo Yivror, and just before that, it said borer v'yochel. So why does it, after saying borer v'yochel, does it say lo yivor? So the Gemara asks, my ko'omar, what is this talking about? So as you scan ahead in the Gemara, you will notice quite a few triangles that appear, and on the side under our Mivne heading, the triangles represent deos, these are opinions, behezber, hamoker, hoyu lefonov, etc. These are opinions that are going to attempt to explain this source. After each explanation, you'll notice a double underline appears. In other words, you focus on the triangles, and then a few lines after each triangle, you'll notice a double underline, beginning with the expression maskif. So they represent kushios ala hezber shekodam lo. They will be questions on whatever answer was given to the source just before. So now we continue with the Gemara and the first explanation. Hoyu Omar Omar Ula. Hochi ko Omar. Thusly, we should understand the source. Borer v'ochel lebo bayom. One can separate the good from the bad, the choice from the undesirable, and eat if it's for that very day. Borer u'miniach lebo bayom. Likewise, one can separate and put aside for in anticipation of eating that day. Ulamohor lo yivor, but to separate the good from the undesirable for the next day, one should not do that. Ve'imbirer chayav chatos. And if he did that, so he would be guilty of a Torah-level violation of the Isur Borer. Maskif lo Rav Chista. Rav Chista challenges Ula's explanation of the source. V'chi muter lefos lebo bayom, v'chi muter levashia lebo bayom. According to Ula, Borer is allowed if it's for Shabbos itself. It's for that very day. But if Borer is a Malacha, so then is there some kind of permission or leniency for doing Malachas if it's for Shabbos day? Absolutely not. One wouldn't even think of it being mutter to bake for Shabbos day or to cook something up for that very day. So we continue. Elo Omar Rav Chista. Rav Chista, who had challenged Ula, now offers his own pshat, his own explanation, and we continue using frames to reflect that these are explanations of the original source. Rav Chista says, Borer v'ochel pochos mikashior. One can separate and eat if it's a quantity less than a dried fig, less than a grogeres, which is the shior of malacha for ochlin. Likewise, one can separate and leave aside if it's less than the quantity that would be mechayev. Kashir lo yivor, but to do borer on the entire quantity, on a full olive dry fig quantity, one should not do that. V'imbirer chayav chatas. And if one does separate that quantity of food, the quantity that would equal a dried fig, that would engender a sin offering obligation. Maskif lo Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef challenges Rav Chissa's pshat and says, "V'chimutur lefos pochus mikashior." Granted that there is something called a minimum requirement, and doing less than the minimum requirement would not be considered a violation of Shabbos per se. However, is one allowed to go ahead as a first choice and, let us say, bake less than the shiur, less than the amount? No. Elo Omar Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef, who just had challenged Rav Chisda, now offers his own explanation. Borer v'ochel biyad. One can do the process of separation if he's doing it manually or by hand, let us say, by literally by hand. Borer u'miniach biyad. Likewise, one can separate and set aside for the time being if he's doing the separation by hand. B'konon u'v'tamchui lo yivor. Konon and tamchui are utensils that could be used as a makeshift separation device, and therefore, since it's a device and it's not simply done by hand, so it becomes more severe, and we say lo yivor, one shouldn't use the konon or tamchui device. The imbirer poter aval osur. If he uses it, he is not on a Torah level violation, because these are not vessels that are designed specifically for separating food from the debris. Therefore, he is not in violation of a Torah level offense, but it's nevertheless usur to do. So poter means he's exempt from bringing a sacrifice, but usur means rabbinically he should not use these devices. Ubenapa ubekvara. Napa and kvara are type of sifter devices or sieves that are designed specifically for separating the debris from the desired part. In the case of, let's say, you're sifting a flour, and in the flour there is other there's other debris, so you would use a sifter. So the that using a device that's designed for borer is not to be used on Shabbos. V'imbirer chayav chatas. And if one uses the official device, he would be guilty of bringing a sin offering, indicating a Torah level violation. Maskif lo Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna challenges Rav Yosef's explanation. Midi kanun v'tamchui kotoni. Does the original source make any reference to the use of these devices? So it doesn't even allude to that. So therefore, Rav Hamnuna challenges Rav Yosef's explanation. Elo Omar Rav Hamnuna. Thusly, we should understand the source. Borer v'ochel, ochel mitoch hapsoles. If one, in doing the act of separation, withdraws, he takes the food, that's borer v'ochel, the ochel mitoch hapsoles, leaving behind the debris, that's called lo derech brera. That's not the normal way of separating. The normal way of separating is to pull aside the debris and leave behind the food. So one can borer v'ochel, he can separate and eat if he is withdrawing the food, leaving behind the ochel, the psoles, that is. Borer u'miniach, ochel mitoch psoles. Likewise, one can make the separation and leave aside the food for a little while later, and provided he is doing it in that way, that he is withdrawing the ochel, leaving behind the psoles. However, psoles mitoch ochel lo yivor, but to separate the debris leaving behind the food, that one should not do. V'imbirer chayav chatas. And if one does so in that fashion, so he will be guilty of doing borer in the normal way, and that is a Torah level offense. And hence, if he does so b'shogeg, so he's chayav a chatas, have to bring the sin offering. Maskif lo Abaye. Abaye challenges Rav Hamnuna and says, "Midi oichel mitoch psolas kotoni." Does it say in the original source anything about a specific way of doing the borer, the withdrawal of the food, leaving behind the psoles? Elo Omar Abaye, borer the ochel the altar. You can do the act of borer if you are going to eat the food immediately. Borer miniach l'alter. Likewise, you can do the act of borer if you're going to leave aside the food. The Tosis, by the way, explains the expression of borer miniach means l'tzorach achirim, that you're leaving it for others, but to eat immediately. Ulebo bayom lo yivor. However, to separate for later that day, to make a separation of food from debris for later that day, one should not do v'im birer. And if he does it, in other words, he doesn't eat it immediately, so nasik bor liyotzer v'chayav chatas. It's no different than separating for storage purposes, and that would be chayav chatas. That would be a Torah level offense. Amrua Rabbonon Kamei de Rava. The Rabbonon said Abaye's explanation in the original source, that it was reported to Rava, Omar Lehu, Shapir, Omar Nachmeni. Rava comments that Nachmeni is another name for Abaye, so he says Abaye is saying very well. In other words, it's a good explanation of the original source. Hoyil Lufonov Shnei Mine Oichlin Ubirer the Ochal Ubirer Vehiniach. A person was sitting in front of two types of food, and he was separating one from the other, and while separating, he separated and ate. Rav Ashi Masni Potter, Rav Yirmiyah Midifti Masni Chayov. Rav Ashi has as his version of this source that it concludes with the expression potter, and Rav Yirmiyah has his version of this source concluding with chayav. The Gemara asks, Rav Ashi masni potter v'ho toni chayav. How can Rav Ashi learn that this is exempt when there is another source that says this is chayav, that the separation of one type of food from another is a real borer problem? Lo kashya. No, there is no problem. Ha b'konon v'tamchui, ha b'napa u'kvara. Depends how the borer is being done. If you're using a konon and tamchui, which we saw earlier were devices that could be used for the act of separation, even though they weren't designed for separating food items from one another, or for use of borer in the context of food, if one uses them, so he's doing something in an unusual fashion, therefore it's exempt from a Torah level violation. And the ha benapu kvora, the source that that the Gemara said he would be chayav, is because he's using an official borer device, a napa kvora, a sieve or sifter. Ki also Ravdimi Omar. Ravdimi, when he came, he told us the following: Shabbato de Rav Bevai Havoi. It was the Shabbos that it was Rav Bevai's turn to serve the assembled. The iklu Rabbi Ami Ravasi, and Ravami and Ravasi arrived. So you have Rav Bevai, who is serving, and in this case he's serving Rav Ami and Rav Asi. Shoda kamayo kalkola de peri. He threw in front of them, or spilled out in front of them, a basket full of fruits. The lo yodana, and Rav Dimi tells us, and I don't know why he acted thusly. Imishum de savar oichol mitoch psolas osur. Is it because Rav Bevai was of the opinion that for him to have withdrawn the food, leaving behind the debris, that even that is usur, so he couldn't have separated the fruits before serving them, so he simply spilled them out and it would be in when they're spilled out and it's all dispersed, so it's very easy to take what you want, and there's no borer problem. So maybe that's why he spilled the basket of fruits out in front of them. Or maybe he was just trying to show them his graciousness, that he's bestowing upon them a large quantity of fruits as one does when he wants to serve his guests with abundance. Before continuing, let's glance at the Tosfos at the bottom of the Omid. V'liyodano imishum diksova oichum itofsos oser pirush lo yodano ma shelo birum tchila koim shavim lefneim. I don't know, says Rav Dimi, why Rav Beimai didn't separate the fruits before bringing it to them. Aval ein lefareish ma shelo birum b'shal shiniach lefneim. But one should not explain here that what Rav Dimi wasn't sure of is that which he was not mevarer or separating them when he was serving them. If there was a question of when he served them, could he have separated the fruits and given them the fruits for immediate eating, that wouldn't have been a question. That wouldn't have been a point of doubt. The point of doubt concerned why is it that he didn't separate the fruits before bringing it out to them. So is it because that would have been a borer problem, even if he would have done it oichel mitoch hapsoles, or he simply wanted to create an impression of abundance, so he spilled it out in front of them. Continuing in the Gemara, Chizkia Omar, Haborer Turmusin Mitoch Psolis Shelen Chayov. Turmus is a type of vegetation that requires extensive cooking. In fact, before it becomes ready for eating, one actually cooks it up seven times. In other words, he cooks it up a certain amount of time, then spills out the water, and then cooks them up again, and again repeats that seven times before they become edible. So this Gemara is telling us one who separates the turmus and leaves behind their psoles is chayav. Rashi at the bottom, haborer tumusin la'achar shisholken, after they've been boiled, hu borer oichel mitoch aklipoi, sets aside, he separates the oichel, the food, from the shell. So Chizkiya says one who does this is chayav. We would mean he is guilty of the isur of borer. Leimo kosover Chizkiya, should we say that Chizkiya is of the opinion that oichel mitoch psolos osur, that even if you're withdrawing the food from the debris, even that is forbidden. And we pointed out before, that would be the less usual way of doing borer, and yet you see that it seems that Chizkiya is opposing withdrawal of the food, leaving behind the psolos. So should we conclude that that's his opinion, that it's osur? No. Shiny turmusin. Turmusin are different. And we continue at the top of Omid Beis. The Shalki Le Shiva Zimni. Turmusin are to be boiled seven times before they achieve their desired taste. The Lo Shalki Le, and if you don't boil them up enough, then Misrach, they start to go bad. Ukipsolis Mitoch Ochel Dami. They would be viewed, therefore, as if you're removing the psoles from the ochel, the debris from the desired part. Now, that's the Gemara. It's fairly short, abbreviated, but Rashi elaborates quite a bit. So, let us glance at the Rashi, and we might as well point out that as you go through the Rashi, there are actually three approaches. The third approach is one where there is a girsa change. It's a different girsa in the third approach that Rashi presents. We've numbered them off. We've numbered the Rashi pshatim. So Rashi at the top says, "V'i lo shakli lei la'oichel mitoch ha'psoles." If he doesn't take the food from the debris, mitoch shurach v'nimok ayedei shenishlak harbe. Since it is the tumis has become very soft, since it's been cooked so much, misrach, it goes bad. V'ilkoch oichel nami, the food part. The food of the tormus itself, kolzman shemeuruv bo, when it is mixed with its own shells, have kipsoles, it is also like psoles. Umiu oichel hu, however, it is in fact food. Umachmirin ole lemeve ahu deshakil kipsoles mitoch ochel. Yet we impose a stringency on him that which he takes out is going to have the din of psoles mitocha ochel. And as Rashi said, that's because the nature of the tormus is that if you don't cook it, if you don't remove it, since it's become very soft, it just will fall apart. The second shot that Rashi gives, we continue, v'linira haborer tumusin mitoch psoles shelhen misheshalkan pam achas. If one removes the tormusin from their shells after they've been boiled only once, mimarkin umaarin oison amayim, one after cooking the tormus one time, the water is spilled out, is emptied out and poured away, uborer hamatulol shilahen, and then at that point he would separate the wormy ones. Kemosh oisin lepulin, like is done with pulin. V'chein b'chopam upam. Likewise, each time he pours out the water, v'zeh borer ho'oichel u'meniach apsoles. And in doing so, he pulls away the food, leaving the debris. V'ilo shalki le misrach garsinon. This is the girsa that we have. The Elo Shalki lay. Actually, we don't have exactly this because we have Elo Shakli. Elo Shalki means if it's not cooked. And you go on in the Rashi, there's a number three. Later on, he has a different girsa. So here it's in the negation. The Elo Shalki lay misrach. If you don't boil it, it will go bad. Garsinon. That is the text that we should have. Hilkoch mishishalkum pa'omim pa'mayim v'shalosh. Once he's cooked them two or three times, choshev lepsoles, it's considered debris. Hoyol, since v'ishavik luhu achi, the lohodar sholik luhu misruchi. If you don't continue the cooking, so they will go bad. So since they haven't reached the stage that they're fully cooked, and if you leave them like this, they go bad. They are considered psoles. Ukshu not lon mitoch shar minim gruim hamuroven bahen. When you remove these undercooked tumusin from the other debris that is amongst them, it's kipsoles mitoch ochel domi. It's like psoles from ochel. Dehano shar minim lo misrachi. The other vegetables that might be cooked together with the tumusin, they don't go bad. The gomer lo bishlad pam rishon ushniya. Their cooking is completed after one or two rounds of cooking. They're not like the tormusin. So if you're cooking tormusin with other things and you have cooked the pot up one or two times and then you withdraw the tormusin from the other things, that's like removal of psoles mitoch ochel. We continue with the Gemara. Before we continue the Gemara text on the side, we've written a nosei, Prote Molochos Ad Daf Ayin Heyomid Beis. The Gemara will be occupied with details of different Molochos until Ayin Heyomid Beis. So we continue in the Gemara, V'atochein, that's to do with grinding, Omar Rav Papa Haiman De Porim Silka, Chayav Mishum Tochein, one who cuts silkos. Silkos is a type of vegetable, and he cuts them into very fine slices. He is guilty of tochein, of grinding. So that the concept of tochein is not limited to someone who is using a grinder to grind something into a fine powdery substance, but even slicing something very thin, like the slicing the silka very thin, is also a type of tochein. Omar Rav Menashe, Haiman de Solis Silti, Chayav Mishum Tochein. One who breaks very small twigs off of wood for the purpose of using them as a kindling for a fire. So it's this Solis Silti is Eitzim Dakim. It's a process of breaking off very small pieces of wood to serve as kindling. He is chayav mishum tochein. That also is a problem of grinding. Amar Rav Ashi, I kopid amashchosa. If he is also concerned with the exact measures, mashchosa has to do with measures. So he's cutting the wood to fit a specific measure. Then chayav mishum mechatech. Then there's an additional offense called mechatech, which is cutting something to size. V'halosh v'ho'ife. Omar Rav Popo. Shavak tana didon bishul samimonim de ave b'mishkan v'nokar oife. The Tana doesn't mention in his list of ovus malachas the malacha of bishul. He, in fact, avoids mentioning the word bishul, which was in the construction of the Mishkan. Cooking was a process done to the plants from which the dye was produced for the dyeing of the various Mishkan elements that needed dyeing. So Rav Papa is wondering, why did the Tana leave aside bishul, which was in the Mishkan, v'nokal ofe, and he chose ofe, which was not baking, is not something that was done in the construction of the Mishkan. The Gemara answers, Tana didon sidura de pas nokal. Our Tana was interested in developing an order and list of malachas that lead up to the making of bread. So that when you start with something like preparing the ground for planting the grains and the eventual harvesting of the grains and the grinding and the separation of the grain from the chaff, etc., all of those are steps leading up to pas. So the final step in making the bread is the malacha of ofe. So that's why ofe was used, and it may be obvious to everyone that ofe is the equivalent of bishul. Ofe is considered an av malacha. It's a parallel to bishul. In other words, what cooking is to food on in a pot. Ofa is to bread put into the oven. So, just to review this main point, the avoidance of bishul in favor of ofa was because the Mishnah had already listed off all the other stages that characterize the making of bread. Make no mistake, it's not that in the Mishkan they made bread as part of the construction of the Mishkan, but rather all the other procedures were also done in connection with the construction of the Mishkan. It's just ofe wasn't, and why was it stuck into the Mishnah and in place of bishul? Is because we wanted to complete the stages of activities that one would also do in the making of bread. Omar Rav Acho bar Rav Avira. Haiman de shodah sichsul atuna chayav mishum mevashel. Actually, before we continue too much further in the Gemara, we glance at the side under our mivneh heading. We have a triangle featured. Peulois shechayoven mishum mevashel. Triangles will highlight different activities where there is a chiyuv, guilt based on the malach of bishul, of cooking. In the Gemara, we've also used a slashed dashed underline to highlight the expression mishum bishul or mishum mevashel. The Hezbra Gemara Loma Kol Echad Eino Pshita. And after we point out the action that is Chayav Mishum Avashel, the Gemara will ask, in each case, isn't this obvious? And we'll have to explain why the points are not obvious. So Rav Acha says, Hayman the Shoda Sichsa Latuna, one who threw a Sichsa, is a wooden stake, like those that keep tenths down. If one threw a yosed in Hebrew, it's called a damp yosed, into a tanor, into an oven, and that's to dry it out, and that it should become hard. Chayav mishum mevashel. This is considered mevashel. So you're being mevashel a wooden peg, which is a stake. Well, then says pshita. Well, yeah, of course, if you're taking something that's damp and putting it into an oven, that is mevashel. So ma'al detema l'shure monokom echavein, without Rav Avira or without Rav Acha telling us this halacha, I would have thought that his intent was to strengthen the stake. That's l'shure is to strengthen the mono, the vessel. And if that was his kavana, so then he is not to be held guilty because of mevashel. Komashalon de mirpa rafi v'hadar komet. That putting this wood into the oven, what happens is at first the dampness that's in it softens it. And then v'hodar komet, and then it becomes hardened. And as a result, the stage in which it gets soft, it's mirpa rafi, that is the stage at which we say it is being misbashel. That's its bishel. Omar Rabo ba Rav Huna. Hayman the arsich kufra chayav mishum avashel, one who heats up zephis is pitch, that's a substance used for lining boats, so one who boils up pitch is chayav mishum avashel pshita. That would seem to be obvious. So mal detemo kiva the hoder v'ikusha emolo, since the pitch eventually becomes hard again, it's not considered something that is associated with Bishol. Komash Malon, so Rabba is telling us that the fact that later on it gets hardened doesn't diminish the fact that in the process it was exposed to a cooking up. The theme behind cooking that one would seem to see from this Gemara is substances that, when subjected to the fire, get softened. That creates a bishul problem. The Gemara continues. We have a new triangle marking. This is a triangle with a colored in tip on the side under our Mivneh heading. We've noted Hai Man the Ovad, and etc. That's what we highlighted with our markings. Yitziras Devarim Shonim B'Shabbos. We're going to discuss the making of different items on Shabbos. Shemechayvin Ribui Chatos. That in making these items, you'll find the person is actually incurring an obligation to bring multiple sin offerings. In other words, in the making of these different items that we're going to feature in the Gemara, there are a number of stages in their manufacture, and each stage will engender a new violation or an additional violation. As far as the listing of them, we are going to recommend that each one looks into the Rashi to see all of the stages. The Gemara itself doesn't tell us what the stages are, but Rashi does reveal. So we continue in the Gemara. Omar Rava Haiman de Ovad Chavita, one who makes a clay barrel on Shabbos, Chayav Mishum Sheva Chatos. He would, in doing that, there are seven avos malachas that he would be guilty of. If you glance at our marked Rashi, you'll see how we've used a double underlined plus numbering system to highlight the different activities, so that in the case of the Shevach HaTos, just to list off all of the different Averos, there's Tochen, Borer, Markid, Losh, Memachik, Mavir, and Mevashel. Continuing in the Gemara, Tanura, one who makes a tanur, an oven. This was a device that was made of clay, and in making the oven, he's chayav mishum shmoine chatos. There is an additional chatos that he is guilty of, and Rashi tells us that it's the malocha of make bepatish. The Makeh B'Patish is the Malach associated with a final stage of doing something. The Gemara continues, Omar Abai, Hai Man De'ovad Chalso, Chayov Achas Esrei Chatos, one who makes a kaveris. A kaveris is a beehive made of reeds, of kunim. So in preparing this device, this Chalso, he would be engaged in 11 different avos malachas. And as we said before, Rashi lists them all off. The chayte lefume chayav shloshes rechatos. And if he makes sews onto it a rim, he will be guilty of a total of 13 chatos in making such a kaveris or such a chalsa. The Gemara continues with a new av malacha, hagoizis es hatzemer v'amalabno, one who shears the wool of an animal and bleaches it or whitens it. Omar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Om Rabbi Yochanan. Before we continue in the Gemara, we have a topic heading for this section of Gemara, under which we've written under the no say, Tevias Tzemer al Gav HaBehema. We'll be discussing the spinning of the wool while the wool is still on the back of the animal. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Om Rabbi Yochanan hatoive tzemer shal gabi behema b'shabes chayev shlosh chatos. One who spins wool on the back of an animal on Shabbos is going to be in violation of three offenses, and hence have to bring three chatos, three sin offerings. Achas mishum gozes, V'achas mishum menapetz, v'achas mishum toive. He will be guilty eventually of shearing, that's gozes, of menapetz, of unraveling the hairs, it's like combing them or separating them from one another, and one offense for spinning the hairs. Spinning the hair fibers creates the threads. We had a number one above Rabbi Yochanan where we had dashed underline his name, and here we have a different opinion. Number two, Rav Kana Omar, Ein derech gezizo bakach, V'ein derech menapetz bakach, V'ein derech tovui bakach. Spinning wool while it's still on the back of the animal is an unusual way of doing things. Hence, doing this whole procedure is considered meshune or shinui, and therefore it is not going to be considered a Torah violation. The Torah holds someone accountable only if he does it in the normal way, not in a shinui way. The Gemara asks, "Velo, is that really so that it's called a shinui?" V'ha Tanya Mishmei de Rebbe Nechemya. Do we not have the following Tanaic source? This source is featuring the pasuk. And we will see that in the construction of the Mishkan, well, it says, Shotuf be'izim v'tavu be'izim. And Rashi here says, Shotuf be'izim in the wide lines, a little less than halfway down, Shotuf be'izim v'tavu be'izim, kro kodoresh. He is darshaning the posuk, Tavu es ho'izim be'gufon, shel izim mashma. When the posuk says, Tavu es ho'izim, it implies that it was spun while on the backs of the animals. The hair fibers, in this case the hair fibers of the goats, were spun on their backs. So Alma, the Gemara says, Tavio al Gabi Behema Shmo Tavio. That Tavio done on the back of the animal is considered Tavio. The Gemara says, Chochma Yaseiro Shaini. The Torah itself says that in the construction of the Mishkan, when it came to this, the work with the hairs, it was done by expert women. The Pasuk says, V'chol isho chachma slave. Therefore, it's considered something, if done by a commoner, by a non-expert, it would be considered unusual. So it's true that in the Mishkan, the wool was spun on the back of the animals, but it was done by someone who was extremely expert in this. But otherwise, for a commoner to do the same thing, that would be considered unusual. And we call it kilachar yad, and he would not be chayev. Tonu Rabbanan. Ha-toilesh es ha-kanaf, v'ha-kot mo, v'ha-mor to, chayev sholosh chatos. One who removes a feather from the wing of a bird, and he is kotmo. Rashi explains, kotmo is after the feather is removed, he cuts off the tip of the feather. The tip of the feather is a soft, fine material that is used for stuffing pillows and mattresses. So, the source also told us, morto. Morto is on the other end of the feather, where the feather itself is rather thick. There are hairs growing out of the feather that are scraped off and also used for stuffing pillows and mattresses. So one who removes a feather and cuts off the fine tip and scrapes off the hairs from the other end of it, he's guilty of three chatos. Omar Shimon ben Lokish. Tolesh chayav mishum gozes. The pulling out of the feather from the wing is considered gozes, shearing. Kotem chayav mishum mechatech. Cutting off the tip is guilty of mechatech. Mechatech is cutting something to a specific size. And Rashi points out that there is a specific amount of feather tip that is fit for his purposes. So, therefore, he is guilty of mechatech. And memaret chayav mishum memachik. And the shaving off, or the pulling off of the hairs at the other end, the thicker end of the feather, is chayav mishum memachik. Memachik is smoothing out. And that's something we find in the manufacture of leather. When it's smoothed out, that's called memachik. So too over here, with the feather. Rashi points out that after the hairs were removed from the feather spine, if you will, or the central piece of the feather, was also used for the making of hats, weaving together these feathers and thereby making a hat. So that there was a significance in having the feather cleaned or smoothed off of its hairs, hence there is a memachik problem. The Gemara continues, Akosher v'amatir. Kshira b'mishkan hecha havoi. Where was Kshiro, was tying knots, where was that in the building of the Mishkan? After all, the 39 Malachas of Shabbos are considered Malachas because they were done in the Mishkan. The Mishnah mentions amongst the 39 Malachas, kosher, tying, and matir, untying. So we want to know, where was tying in the construction of the Mishkan? Kshiro b'mishkan hechavoy. to answer this, you'll notice that there is a series of names with double underlines, and on the side of the one there are no same. In the heading, we featured a double underline and also indicated shlavim. These are stages. Lahazbir, efo hoyu kosher umakdir basias hamishkan. Where were these activities done in the construction of the Mishkan? So Omar Rabba, Shekein Koshrin Biasedois Oiholim. The Yesedos are pegs or the stakes that were driven into the ground. There were attached to them the tent. The tent of the Mishkan tent, so that the Rashi will tell you here that this, based on, of course, the Gemara, that there is a problem here of kosher umatir. But before we get to that, Rashi says, "B'yaseidus aholim noatzim yaseidus bekarka kirechtiv yaseidus haMishkan v'koshen hayirios b'hen b'meisraim." The Mishkan was covered with large sheets of fabric. And they had cords extending from them that were attached to pegs that were driven into the ground, so that the mesreim, the cords attached to the Mishkan covers, were tied kosher, that's tied to the pegs. The Gemara though asks on this pshat, hahu kosher almanas lahatihu, that's a tying with a known intention or known need of their coming to untie it, and hence this is called a kesher she'ena shel kayom. It's not a permanent type knot or a knot without any anticipated untying to it, and as a result of that, that's not considered kshira. For something to be considered kshira, it has to be something with an element of permanence to it. Ella, and of course with the stakes here, as soon as they needed to continue traveling in the midbar, they would untie the knots from the stakes. Elo Omar Abaye, Shekain. Abaye is a second approach to explain where was Shira in the Mishkan. Shekain Orge Yerios Shenifsika Lohen Nima Kushrim Oisa. The people that were weaving the sheets of material, if a strand snapped, Nifsika, it broke, it tore or it snapped. So the nima is the strand, kosher, so they would tie it together. Omar le Rava, tiratzto kosher. Rava says, okay, we can accept that as an explanation for kosher, that you would tie the strand together and that you would leave it tied permanently. That explains kosher. Matir my equal memor, where in the Mishkan was the malach of untying that would justify our Mishnah as listing Matir as a malacha. V'chitema, and if you ask, or if you say, if you suggest, de'i misrami le trei kitri bahadi hadodi, if it would happen that you would have two knotted strands that we just alluded to, two knotted strands where the knots would come out next to one another, that would be a bit bulky, if you will, it would have this bulging look to it. Shori chad v'kotar chad, he would untie one of them and leave the other one tied. Well, that is not reasonable. Hashto lifnei melech boser v'dom ein oisin kein. In the preparation of material for a human king, one wouldn't do that. Lifnei melech malchei hamlochim hakadosh baruch hu oisin, would you think that that is what they would do in the preparation of sheets of material for the Almighty in his Mishkan? Rashi points out that there are two strands that were knotted and you would untie one of them, threads or the strings used in the weaving of the Mishkan, where weaving was necessary, were very thick strands, and it would actually leave a hole in its place if you were to untie it. So it's something that wouldn't be honorable even in front of a human king, let alone in front of the Almighty. Hello, Omar Rava. V'itema Rebbe Eloi. Rava, some versions have Rebbe Eloi. Shekain tzade chalazan koshrin umatirin. In the making of the nets that were used to trap the chilazon. The chilazon was a water creature whose blood was used for tcheles, for the achieving the dye used in the Mishkan. So the nets that were used to catch the chilazon creature, needed to be knotted and needed at times to be untied and left that way. Rashi says, second line from the bottom, Koshin matirin shikol rishosos. Rishosos are nets. Asuyas ksharm ksharm. They're made of ropes that are netted, that are knotted together. Vehein kishri kayoma. They are permanent knots. Upamim shitzorch lito chutin meresh zu. Lahoisif al zu. Sometimes you need rope for another net. So they would untie that piece of rope and transfer it to another net. So when it was untied, vis-a-vis the first net, you have something that was untied and left that way, because you then took the rope and attached it to a second net. We continue in the Gemara. Vatofer shtei tfiros. One who makes two stitches. The Gemara asks for ha lo kaima. It's not something that's going to last. If you insert a needle into a garment with a thread and then insert it one more time, making two stitches in the garment, it's not going to hold. So the Gemara answers, Omar Rabo Babrachana Om Rabbi Yochanan V'hu Shekoshran. After he stitched the garment with these two stitches, he then tied the thread so it will remain in place. Akorea Amanas Litfor. The malocha of ripping, of tearing, with the intention of re-sewing. Kriya B'mishkan Mihavi. Where was tearing done in the construction of the Mishkan? So Rabba, Rabbi Zeira, Damri Chavayu, they both explain. We continue at the top of Ayin Heyomad Aleph, Shekain, Yeria, Shenofal, Bo, Darno. Yeria is a sheet of woven material. If there happened to be infected or afflicted by a Darno, a worm, and so the worm would erode a section of the woven fabric. Korin ba, that section would be cut away. The tofrin osa, and then the cut away section had to be re-sewn in such a way that it would not look wrinkled or creased or bulging. So we've just described then a case of tearing, the tearing away of the eroded or the rotted section of the woven fabric, and then they would re-sew it. So that's Korea Almanas Litfor. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.